GE has a small victory in a long battle. From Marketplace in New York, I'm Sabri Benishore in for David Brancaccio. General Electric reported earnings this morning, 19 cents per share, beating expectations. The stock is up 2% in pre-market trading. The 126-year-old industrial conglomerate is in the midst of restructuring. Its stock is down 50% over the past year, and last month, the company was booted from the Dow Jones Industrial Average. Marketplace's Aaron Schrank has more on GE's turnaround effort.
GE used to be the most valuable company in the world. Now it's cutting costs and selling assets to overcome weaker demand for gas-powered turbines and $15 billion in unfunded liabilities from its legacy insurance business. Analyst Nicholas Heyman says GE's transformation is necessary after nearly a decade of bad investments.
Acquisitions that were either mistimed or overpriced, excessive repurchase of GE stock that was either mistimed or mispriced, and an overinvestment in GE Digital.
CEO John Flannery has promised to sell off $20 billion in assets. So far, GE has sold its rail business and plans to offload its lighting business and majority stake in its oil services company. It's also looking to spin off its healthcare unit. Consultant Heidi Pozo has been following GE's turnaround.
The goal is to get to a smaller company that is more manageable, that they have expertise in.
Now GE will focus primarily on renewable energy, its struggling power business, and its most profitable unit, GE Aviation. I'm Aaron Schrank for Marketplace.
And in the middle of this earnings season, we have a guide online to help you with the top five things you should know about earnings. It's at marketplace.org. Just click mentioned on air. And let's take a look at the numbers. The FTSE in London is down 0.4%. S&P and NASDAQ futures are down in the 1 to 3 tenths percent range. The Dow future is down a whole 0.5%.
Not everyone gets a chance to study the economy in school. Anyway, who doesn't need a brush up? Marketplace helps you continue your education in a way that we hope is smart, accessible, and hopefully even a bit fun. Your donation is not only an investment in your own learning, but also in helping us make more people smart about the economy. And that, we think, is good for everyone. To learn how you can help, visit marketplace.org/investors. Thank you.
President Trump has criticized Germany for being captive to Russian energy, and he repeated that criticism this morning in an interview on CNBC. He's talking about the Nord Stream 2 pipeline. It runs 745 miles from the westernmost tip of Russia down the length of the Baltic Sea and into Germany. The pipeline connects the world's biggest exporter of natural gas with the largest economic bloc, but it also pits Germany against some of its allies. My Marketplace colleague, the BBC's Anu Anand, has been following this story. Good morning, Anu.
Hi, Sabri.
Why is this pipeline so contentious? Because it's not just contentious between the U.S. and Germany.
That's right. And that's because it touches on some really big issues. Affordable energy, energy security, and also a big question for Europe and really the rest of the world. How much should they be trusting Russia? Now, the Nord Stream 2 is the second pipeline. And when it opens in 2019, it's going to double supplies to Europe. The $11 billion pipeline has been financed by European companies, but it's going to be fully owned by Russia state gas group Gazprom. So essentially, Russia's going to have its hands on the taps.
Well, the president actually wants the United States to sell gas to Europe. Is Europe interested in that?
So, yeah, but obviously, given the distance, that would be a lot more expensive for Europe. Now, I guess the U.S. would argue, look, you can trust us more and it's a price worth paying. But the bottom line is that Russian gas is cheaper. There's also this argument that if Germany buys Russian gas, it actually makes Russia as dependent on the Europeans for the cash as Europe is dependent on Russia for the energy, and that's not necessarily a bad thing. It means you can influence Russia more. 2019, when this pipeline opens, is crucial because North Sea gas supplies are dwindling. So whatever the politics, the bottom line alone makes it look pretty likely that Russian gas is going to fill that energy gap.
My Marketplace colleague, the BBC's Anu Anand, thanks so much.
Thanks a lot.
10 years after the Great Recession, the economy is doing pretty great. Unemployment is at 4%. It's fallen to as low as 3.8% in recent months. The job market hasn't been this good in nearly 20 years since the late 90s economic boom at the end of the Clinton administration. But there are some big differences. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman turns back the clock for us.
It was the first week of 2000, the new millennium, and this was the top headline on Marketplace.
It's Friday the 7th of January. I'm David Brancaccio. The jobs market at the end of 1999 was as bright as it's been for about three decades. There's word today from the
Labor Unemployment had just fallen to 4% and would fall even lower later that year. Now, fast forward to 2018. Unemployment's just as low today. Job openings are near record highs. But, says Peter Capelli at the Wharton School,
things might not be quite as great.
The latest government data show about twice as many people today are long-term unemployed, looking for work for 6 months or more. And more people are working part-time because they can't find full-time work, says Michael Strain at the American Enterprise Institute.
As scheduling software has gotten more advanced, as the low-wage labor market has become more threatened by automation, it's harder for workers to get the kind of hours they want.
Capelli says finding a good job is more challenging now for those with less education and skills because employers have boosted job requirements.
So, for example, legal secretaries, that was a job filled by high school graduates. Now it requires a college degree, and it's not because the work changed.
Another difference from the Clinton-era boom, a larger percentage of the population back then was participating in the labor market, working or actively looking for work. Plus, wages were growing much faster, up 3.7% year-on-year. Now, wage growth is just 2.7%. Dean Baker at the Center for Economic and Policy Research says with a lot of potential workers still on the sidelines, employers don't feel they need to ratchet up wages. After the Great Recession,
as the unemployment rate was shooting up, workers had very little bargaining power, and basically companies were able to increase the portion of output that they could pocket as profits.
That's not a trend economists expect to turn around anytime soon. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
Our executive producer is Nicole Childers. Our digital producer is Janet Nguyen. Our engineer is Brian Allison. And I'm Sabri Benishore with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.